And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson. Dennis Dodd joins the show today. The Doddcast will focus on the incredible history that was made in college football this past weekend. Oklahoma, Texas Tech, record-breaking offensive performance. What does it mean for football in general? Dennis Dodd checks in there, as well as a look at the other side of things. Florida and Georgia, not a lot of offense expected there. What Dennis is looking at, and much more from the SEC. Make sure you're subscribed so that you can get the podcast first and enjoy a Doddcast. Back here on the SEC on CBS podcast, it's a Doddcast edition of the show. Dennis Dodd joining as we record here on this Wednesday morning. Good morning, Dennis. How are you doing?
I am great, ready to go. How are you?
I'm fired up. It's week nine. We've got a lot going on. You've been at the Big 12 basketball media days, and before we dive into one of the subjects of your Inside College Football column, a little bit of news coming from there, as there was a Sports Business Journal report regarding the popular rumor that the Big 12 could actually make more money by not expanding, and a lot of people are pointing to that as perhaps one of the avenues that the Big 12 decision makers have taken with their decision to just not expand at all after taking us through the whole circus as we detailed for you last week. Dennis, what'd you learn from Big 12 basketball media days regarding the expansion for football and the rest of the sports?
Well, there was a report in Sports Business Journal that ESPN had quote-unquote bought out the pro rata clause that caused this whole thing really in the first place for a total of $10 million. Now, Bob Bowlsby kind of refutes that, says negotiations are still ongoing. But I think the trigger words here are buyout. In other words, if this is true, and eventually we'll learn whether it is or not, the Big 12 cannot exercise that pro rata clause that makes ESPN pay for any expansion candidates they might bring in. That being said, do I think they're going to expand in the next 8 years? No. I think the news here is that if it's $10 million, that's not $10 million a year. That works out to $125,000 per school.
So
that's
not much.
All it takes for them to drop the clause, then I don't think the Big 12 had much leverage at all. And then you're starting to understand why they didn't expand. You know, there wasn't going to be much leverage there.
So you're, as we have learned more, is it becoming, are you almost siding with the Big 12 with the understanding? Like, if I represent the college football fan that was excited about Big 12 expansion just because it changes things up and it gives some smaller schools an opportunity and it was going to be another fun, interesting development in the college sports landscape, as you are learning more, Dennis, it sounds like you're finding yourself not to put yourself in the story, but you're finding yourself being able to understand even though there has been a big circus around it, why the Big 12 decision makers ultimately decided not to.
I don't think it was because of that. I still stand behind what I wrote. I think it was a clunky process. It wasted a lot of people's time, and they knew the result. They could have known the results of this before they started, in that there weren't two schools that gave them that really made them better in football. Yes, they were going to anger their rights partners if they did it. But that didn't seem to be a hindrance on July 19th when they announced this process. And if they just realized it over the last 3 months, shame on them, because they went public. We know that in the Sports Business Journal story that said one, they shouldn't do it. And two, a week ago, Eric Shanks, the president of Fox Sports, said it would be, quote, a harmful decision if the Big 12 expanded. But that was past the process. So, no, I think they wasted everybody's time. I think there were significant people in that conference who wanted expansion, but there wasn't enough support for it. So whatever leverage the Big 12 had, you can kind of see what it was worth, $125,000 per school over 8 years.
Wow. Wow, 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 wow. Anything else before we get to Big 12 news? Well, not news. Your an interesting follow-up Big 12 record-breaking game, Oklahoma and Texas Tech. There was exactly My favorite part of this box score, and we've covered this a little bit, Tom Fornelli spoke about it at the beginning of the week, one of the most interesting facts about this box score, Dennis, how, when you are setting records, when you have over 1,700 yards of offense, how do both teams finish with exactly the same number of total yards of offense?
Yeah, that's and Patrick Mahomes, what are the odds of him tying the FBS record?
734, right?
Not a yard less, not a yard more, but he ties it. Yeah, that among the other weird occurrences in that game. Yeah, so it, you know, it was that, and we'll get into this. You know, I think half the population at least was turned off by that result. You know, the other half were thrilled. You know, maybe another quarter didn't stay up because it was a late game.
And there was other action going on. You know, we had Ohio State that was losing to Penn State at the time. The game in the moment, as you know, we are all here trying to create the best college football content for you, the listeners and viewers of CBS Sports, of course, all the time, around the clock. And it was a game that kind of crept up out of nowhere. Our colleague at CBS Sports on College Football Rundown, Brady Quinn, was on the call. I know you talked to him for the Inside College Football piece on Oklahoma-Texas Tech and the reaction this has caused. What are you sensing after doing a little bit of digging? Because, you know, as my as unscientific as my Twitter feed is, Dennis, my Twitter feed showed what you guessed, which is some people that said, this is awesome, this is a video game, this is just like me picking up the controller and playing my college buddies, and then the other half that said, this isn't football at all.
I guess what I took away from it is we're just going to have to accept it. Now, this is on, obviously, the radical end of this offensive revolution that started really in 2000, is now continuing, where the average game, Chip, the average team scores 30.4 points per game. That would be the sixth time since 2000 that a national record was set. The Big 12, with that game alone, increased its scoring average by 4% to over 37 points per game. But look, if you're going to criticize it, count Bob Stoops among those. He basically said there was nothing entertaining about it. You know, they won the game. That's all he took away from it. But he was disgusted by his defense. And there's a larger story there, because I maintain that really no one outside of maybe Clemson and the SEC schools are really getting quality defensive tackles, not ends.
Tackles.
Because you can there's some schools, Texas A&M has good defensive ends. Tackles, run-stuffing guys that take up two blockers that are key to any scheme. And I mean any scheme, running, passing, anything. And they're sorely lacking, obviously, in the Big 12. So my takeaway was, if you may have hated it, you may have been highly entertained, but it's just going to be the way of the world. Let's not forget, we're coming off the highest-scoring championship game ever, involving three of the biggest offensive minds in the game, Nick Saban, Brent Venables, and Kirby Smart. So it's not worth complaining about it. It's what it is these days.
But some of it, I think, is regional, right? Or is it just you've got more perspective than I do. Do you see this as just being more? Because the coaches, if you go to coaching clinics, if you listen to coaches, interview any of them, they'll all talk about the cyclical nature of football and the way that the pendulum swings back and forth. Now, are you saying, Dennis, like, do you think that it has been swinging so violently towards the offense or towards a wide open style, and it continues to, or is this something where we will see the reaction to it eventually? Because I see schools in Texas replicating what's going on at the Texas high school level. And that's one of the things that helps feed into this, you know, that's just Big 12 football. But is there something bigger nationally when you say we're just going to have to get used to it?
Yeah, I think obviously the rules have favored offense for a long, long time. I can't put my finger on it, but it was a long time ago that someone decided that we needed to open up the game. It was getting too low scoring and too boring, too staid. And so we know it favors the offense. The answer to that is, I just think there's a different definition now of what it means to play good defense. I talked to Phil Bennett about this a while ago, the defensive coordinator at Baylor. And he said, you know, the number used to be 17. If you could hold a team under 17 points, you had a good shot, no matter what kind of offense you had. It's about it's more than that now. It's about 24, I guess. And, you know, if you grew up being a defensive coach or defensive-minded, 24 sounded, ugh, that's a lot of points. But that's just the way it is. And then the reaction to that is, well, is there any movement to dial this back through the rules? And I asked Bob Bowlesby that, the Big 12 commissioner, who just happens to be the chairman of the oversight committee. Any rules changes would have to go through his committee. And he said, you know, we'll see. He speculated that the targeting rule had a lot to do with it. And I don't know if I buy that. It's a very small part of the game. But, you know, the fact that you can't go willy-nilly into a ball carrier, and when you do, it's 15 yards, never mind being thrown out of the game, that opens up the game further. It's in general, players come to the college game not knowing or not having enough reps to be able to tackle. Coaches will tell you that across the board because of 7-on-7, because of concerns about full contact pads and concussions. And we're going to have to live with that. So I guess the answer is yes, it's going to keep going.
So what do you want? More concussive hits or lower scores?
Right. To your point, yes, it has infected everyone. I think it was 2 years ago, the A&M Alabama game. Well, no, it was 3 years ago with Johnny Manziel's last year in 13. Where Texas A&M put up the most points ever on Alabama. Alabama won the game. It was like 49-42, if you remember.
Yep.
But that was and Alabama won that game. But they gave up 627 yards, which was a record at the time. Now, obviously, Alabama is running a zone read spread at times with tempo. So they joined the crowd. Are they going to lose a game or win a game? 66-59, I think not, but they've already won, lost, and won very similar games to Ole Miss the last 2 years.
Yeah, I'm fine with higher scores if they come as a result of explosive plays, special teams touchdowns, turnovers that lead to quick scores. Mm-hmm. But when almost, I mean, there were only four punts in that Oklahoma-Texas Tech game. And I think that's one thing. Like, if you score a lot because your punt returner gave you a short field, or, you know, some other play that seems inherent to the game of football, you know, that it is when it gets video game and there does not seem to be any defense apparent. That's when I start to lose my interest, or at least my intrigue a little bit.
And I think Cliff Kingsbury is a great example, the Texas Tech coach. He's had more written about him. He's, you know, the 500 coach with the most written about him. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. He's been on magazine covers, been Offensive Revolution. He's glib. He's a good looking guy, but I think he's either one game below or at 500 in 3 years, to the point where if I'm Texas Tech, I'm sitting there going, what are we getting out of this? You know, we're just spinning our wheels. God bless him, Mike Leach, who I talked to for this piece too. He brought them to unprecedented heights in his 10-year stay there with the offense, basically, that Cliff Kingsbury is running. But you know, went to 10 straight bowls and almost got to a BCS bowl with it. So they played enough defense while he was there.
Well, from an offensive explosion to the largest outdoor punting party, Dennis, Jacksonville, Florida is the site of Florida and Georgia. It's our SEC on CBS game of the week. There is a couple different competing storylines here. Among them, if Kirby Smart is going to be able to get the kind of win that will hush some of the grumbling in Athens. And among them, if Florida is going to be able to keep pace in the SEC East, currently in first place, trying to make it back to Atlanta for a second straight year under Jim McElwain. Dennis, I'm expecting a lot of punts, a lot more than there were in Oklahoma and Texas Tech. How do you see this game? One where, you know, we have been spoiled by a lot of Alabama in our face, and now that Alabama is gone, we get to see the rest of the SEC. Where's your intrigue? Where are you sinking your hooks into Florida, Georgia this week?
Well, you're right. it is the antithesis of what we just talked about.
Right.
Florida is offensively challenged. Georgia's headed there. You know, it's after what happened at Vanderbilt, that was inexcusable. But you're right. Florida controls the East. And, you know, look, they've got the bye week to get ready. This is one of those games where I wouldn't call either of these teams dominant. I wouldn't be surprised if either one won. Georgia, in a rivalry game, has the running backs that they should rely on. Hint, hint. Kirby Smart, instead of trying to throw it all over the lot with Jacob Eason, burn some clock and wear Florida down. Florida's got a world-class defense, and try to get out with this, because, you know, if we're going to talk about how great the SEC is, if Florida loses this game, we got to talk about how really mediocre the East is. And that, look, that's no secret. They've lost seven straight SEC championship games, but it would behoove, you know, the conference's reputation at the moment if Florida won this game and stayed in control of the East with one loss.
The next couple weeks are going to show us exactly how much distance there is between Alabama and the rest of the SEC in 2016.
Absolutely.
I mean, if Tennessee doesn't look good playing at South Carolina this week, if Florida-Georgia is an ugly game that doesn't really, you know, it's just a rock fight, and then if Alabama comes out and goes into Tiger Stadium on Saturday night and wins in a convincing fashion again, I don't think anyone would doubt the greatness of Alabama, but I think it'd be a hard argument to say that that they are representative of the 100% meat grinding conference that sometimes the SEC has been in the past.
I go back and forth on College Football Rundown. I rank the Power Five conferences, and every week now, between the Big Ten and SEC, depending on the results, and there is no right answer. I had the SEC on top this week. But, you know, you're right. If Alabama loses, would anybody be surprised if South Carolina beat Tennessee?
No. Nah.
After what South Carolina did last week. Now, they struggled with UMass, but they won. They seem to have found a bit of an offense, but I wouldn't be surprised at all. And so where are we then? And if LSU wins and everybody in the league's got a loss with 5 weeks to go, I think Alabama's in a position where they can suffer a loss and still get to the playoff. But they wouldn't necessarily control the West at that point. So it's more than interesting these next few weeks. You're right.
As we look elsewhere around the country, haven't gotten a chance to pick your brain about this one. Ohio State, a very, very, very talented Ohio State team, a team that I was just gaga over, Dennis. I was ready to pencil this team all the way to the playoff. I loved how they were young. I loved how they were hungry. But a young team, maybe, showing some of its youth in two straight night road games against Penn State. The special teams let them down a little bit. A couple big special teams plays helping spur on that Nittany Lions upset. And not a great performance from JT Barrett. Urban Meyer, in his own words, saying we're not a great team right now. Dennis, what do you make about this phenomenally talented but not great Ohio State team as we look at the rest of the Big Ten and as we look down the line towards who the Big Ten will be sending into playoff consideration?
Well, it showed some flaws in Ohio State that I wasn't sure were there, but now I'm convinced are there. I wrote last Friday that in my weekend piece that Ohio State does have problems throwing down the field, at least statistically. They were 90th in passing plays of 10-plus yards. They were 98th in passing plays of 30-plus yards. So they hadn't gotten it down the field much, and I think that showed against a quality, turns out to be a quality Penn State defense. The breakdowns in special teams are what they are. You know, you have to clean them up, but it might cost you the division. It might cost you the Big Ten. And you can bet that Jim Harbaugh is breaking down that tape right now. I think Urban Meyer's default setting when things get close with a quarterback like JT Barrett, Tim Tebow, Braxton Miller, is to just put it in his hands and run it and use that plus one and pound people. JT Barrett's a very talented runner. He's not as good as a passer. And we saw that late Saturday where Ohio State still had time to get down to get into field position.
Oh, yeah, 4 minutes.
Yeah, and just couldn't get the ball down the field. And that lack of medium to long passing ability showed. So it did that. It opened up the East to maybe Penn State, a three-way tie. Penn State would be eliminated. In other words, if Penn State and Ohio State won out, all three would have one loss. Penn State would not win that tiebreaker. They would have to have Michigan lose twice now for them to win it. So that's a long, long shot. And I don't know if anybody, you know, last week at this time, we weren't exactly rolling that around in our heads. You know, what is Penn State's path to the Big Ten title game? It's a slight one. But I think, you know, you're seeing that James Franklin made it out to be like a program changing moment. Maybe it is. You know, in other words, I think he suggested, you know, long time suffering, that this got them over the NCAA penalties. We'll see. You know, you have to follow it up. But it was great for the moment for Penn State.
Consider me not sold.
Not yet on the
snake oil salesman trying to tell me that Penn State's all good now. Like that game, there was, listen, Saquon Barkley is a phenomenal football player. And I think Saquon Barkley can start for tons of Power 5 schools. But there was very little about Penn State's performance other than good defense up front. I mean, they whipped Ohio State in the trenches, no doubt. Mm-hmm. They got after them. They were beating blocks. That Ohio State offensive line got outplayed in Happy Valley on Saturday night. But, Dennis, outside of that, I'm not a believer. Not in Penn State.
Yeah, I'm not a believer yet. But you raise a good point about James Franklin, you know, the snake oil salesman. I think he is what he is. You're just going to have to accept it. You know, he's not going to change whether they would have lost by 40 or obviously won this game. And look, he's got a little bit of a track record. Anybody who wins 9 in consecutive seasons at Vanderbilt has my respect. So can he get it done? Yeah, I think they would have been way ahead had Bill O'Brien stayed.
Right.
But he didn't. And, no. You know, they had to start over. So, and consecutive 7 and 6 seasons weren't good enough. This will sustain him. This will get him back off the hot seat for next season.
Well, speaking of hot seat, Austin is going to be the location of Baylor and Texas, a Texas team that has started 3-4 again under Charlie Strong. A Baylor team, undefeated but widely doubted, comes into town, and Texas is a narrow underdog at home. Are you going to step on the edge and step out there for the Longhorns and predict a Texas upset against the Bears this Saturday?
Well, I think Baylor's a better team at this point. What I want to know about Baylor, and I haven't checked this out, is how many players they've got. Remember how they made a big deal at the beginning of the season about how they only had 70 scholarship players?
Right.
Well, given natural attrition, I would suspect it's way below that right now. And if it is, the question becomes, how many scholarship players do you really need to win? Now, that, you know, they're going through the meat of their schedule. No one's really talking about them. Even in the Big 12, West Virginia has got a defense. You know, Dana Holgorsen, you can look at their schedule and see them going undefeated, perhaps. Texas, that's the bigger story in that game.
Yeah, no doubt.
Charlie Strong's job.
Yeah.
It's a week-to-week thing.
I think it's fascinating. I mean, this is one of the biggest games in the country, and it has, and all of the storylines, for the most part, are focusing not on the team that is undefeated on October 28th or 29th or 30th.
And frankly, Baylor and Jim Grove makes it hard to talk about football when you think about Baylor, you know, sometimes. But they've got really good players, and Seth Russell is probably the second best quarterback in the league, I would guess. Shaq Linwood is a 1,000-yard rusher. Look, if Oklahoma is giving up 59 points, then, you know, I think Baylor's defense is better than that. I think they're going to win the game, and that's going to be a developing story in November as these two undefeated teams come down the stretch, because they've both got flaws. They've both got reasons why the committee shouldn't or wouldn't consider them, some of them you can't say in mixed company. I mean, are we to have a conversation about Baylor, whether any of that stuff should apply in that selection room? Some of the stuff that happened off the field, none of those players that I know of are guilty. But it's a damaged brand right now, and we're human beings. I think that's a. I think I just gave myself a story idea.
So, Baylor's got to be there. See, I think that I have on a very, very deep mental level. I could be your example. This is the psychological impact of the Baylor scandal. My brain is refusing to accept the fact that they're going to be there at the end in the Final Four, one way or another. I figure there's going to be something that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Something. No, I mean, no way. And that's unfair. That is unfair to anyone at Baylor who is playing football as a student athlete and had nothing to do with any of the scandal or the cover-up or the mishandling of sexual assault allegations. But in my head, I'd like to think that the ball's going to bounce in a way that doesn't have, on the biggest stage of the sport has, the Baylor Bears as the primary story.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not saying they'll go undefeated, but now we're going to have to start thinking about it because we are in week nine. Is it week nine? Week nine.
Yep.
To think about that. And look, if they are... then they'll be in. They'll be in the playoff. West Virginia as well. An undefeated Power Five champion will
gets
not
in.
Be left out.
Yeah.
We know that because there's only been one time since 1998, there's been three undefeated Power Five conference champions, and that's when Baylor got left out in 2004. So they would be in.
Auburn.
Now, the same applies with the BCS as the BCS era. You lose a game, you lose the ability to argue. We can discuss, but you can't really argue for your place. And the same applies. Yeah, I think you have to look at Washington, too, because I'm looking way ahead. Does anybody realize that Mike Leach may hold the Pac-12's playoff chances in his hands?
Oh, it's
terrifying. The Apple Cup on the last day of the season. They're 4-2 right now, but they're tied atop the North with Washington at 4-0. I don't think anybody would put Washington State in Washington's class, but the Apple Cup is a toss-up game. So what happens when – forget one loss. How about one loss on the last day of the season?
How about one win in the Apple Cup is the only reason Washington made a bowl game last year?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I talked to Mike Leach this week for that Oklahoma – Texas Tech story, and he's definitely dialed in on Washington.
Oh, yeah. I think Washington could lose to Utah this week, or I think Washington could lose to Utah in the Pac-12 championship game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. And, you know, that begs the – or raises the issue that people have already started about a team that doesn't win its division being in, which theoretically could happen, but it's going to take – a conference champion with two losses for that even to be on the table, in my opinion. And even then, maybe not.
It's so also, and it's mostly coming up with Louisville, right?
It is. You're right.
Yeah.
And so it would take a two loss, somebody else for Louisville to get in. And if we're going to have that conversation, we have to start looking at Louisville's second half schedule, which is not very good.
Yeah. We play
just,
out.
Just throwing that out there for people to digest when, they're all angry at me, and I start writing about it November 15th, just remember.
Well, I was going to say, you know, we play out all these scenarios as if November doesn't hand us 5 to 6 inexplicable college football outcomes every single season.
I write this story every year that, you know, on November 1st or thereabouts. This is when it's going to get decided. This is when, like you said, we're going to have inexplicable upsets and results. Injuries you never would have thought about because everybody's worn down.
Heartbreaking injuries.
Everybody knows each other this time of year in conference play. And so we're going to see more of Penn State and Ohio State because up until that time, we hadn't really had that eye-popping upset. It just hadn't. And that was the first one of the season. I will sit here and predict and agree with you and get ready for about 5 or 6 more of those in the next 6 weeks.
You know what I think the first one was last year? I think we got it. This is week 9 that we're going into. Mm-hmm. I think the first one last year was week 7 when Georgia Tech blocked the field goal against Florida State and ran it back.
Yes.
And then we had Michigan.
That, I mean,
and then
that
we had Michigan. Michigan State was the next week.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And that was even, you know, the result wasn't a shock. The way it happened was.
Right.
Because, as I recall, and Mark D'Antonio keeps telling me, they outgained them 2-1. Michigan State really stifled Michigan, and for whatever reason, they were up, whatever it was, 27-21. But again, a rivalry game. It was the way it ended. It wasn't the result. You know, again, Georgia Tech, Florida State, a conference game, rivals. It was the way it ended. Florida State played terrible that night. But, you know, we're going to see more of these, and that's why this is the greatest game on earth.
He is Dennis Dodd. Follow him at Dennis Dodd CBS. It's the greatest game on earth. I'm happy to cover it with you, and I enjoy these chats as always. Thank you, Dennis. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much, Chip.